Lost Rhetoric. This is Jason Dinges. Thank you so much for being here with me. And I am so glad you are here in the brand new year of 2021. It's, you know, we all know it's just like 2020, just a few days later. So let's not get too excited. All right. Let's just keep moving on. I'm glad to be back. I took a week off. I hope you miss me, you know, not in a bad way. I hope you weren't, you know, tormented, but I missed you. And I hope the feeling was just mutual. That's it. I just needed a little space. I needed a little break. And it felt okay. It felt all right. That's all I can really say. I missed doing the show. So I'm glad to be back. And I hope you are glad that I am back. But this is the 30th episode. Yeah, that's it. Fuck yes. Thank you guys for being here with me. So at the end of the year, I did a two-part thrash and rehash of the year 2020, where I had a bunch of old guests come back and talk to me. Not all of them. Not all of them could do it. Not all of them were available. Not all of them really felt that they had shit to say. But the ones that came back on had plenty to say, and I had a really good time talking to them, and I had a fairly decent time putting the episodes together. If you listened to the episodes, you know it was pretty rough go. It wasn't a lot of long nights, it was two long nights, but I had to put my cat, Ohio, down right in the middle of it all, and it was a bit of a sad time. But, hey, it's a new year. And I still miss my cat, so there's nothing that's going to change that. But let's just get into what we always get into, you know? Put together those two episodes. They came out one day after the other. And let's just go through who listened to those two episodes the most. This is a combo of stats here. Who listened to the Thrash and Rehash episodes the most? Top five. Starting at number five, as usual, Los Angeles, California, coming in. Number five, still there. Thank you, L.A. Tied with you at number five, St. Paul, Minnesota, who is no stranger to the top five. So thank you, St. Paul. Coming in at number four, Waynesboro, Virginia. Thank you, Waynesboro. You have been very consistent, and I really appreciate that shit. Number three, Tigard, Oregon. Always there. It's like, I feel like Tigard is just becoming this really, comfort zone for me. Like, I could go into Tigard now and not feel as annoyed as I normally do when I go into Tigard, you know? And that has nothing to do with Tigard itself. It's just getting to Tigard that is hard because, you know, traffic and whatnot. But I love you, Tigard. Thank you for listening. And as usual, tell everyone you know. Thank you. Number two, Winchester, Virginia. Always up there. Thank you, Winchester. And number one, Portland, Oregon. And I have to say, Portland has just been very supportive of this show and of me and, you know, of my bands throughout the years and anything that I've ever kind of put out there in the world in any creative way. Portland is very receptive. So I'm in love with you, Portland, and I thank you. And I hope you understand and feel the love that I have for you, because I feel and understand the love that you have for me. So I appreciate it. And yeah, that's it, man. That's top five. Now, what have I been listening to? It's been a couple weeks, but honestly, not that much. I mean, I'm just going to blow through it here. There's an Austrian band called D-Cracks. D-E-E-C-R-A-C-K-S. D-Cracks. You know, they're a real raspy voiced, I don't know, pop punk Ramones core band. You know what I mean? They're just really great punk rock music, really gravelly vocals, which I enjoy more in with melodic punk music in rock and roll than I enjoy with the saccharine sounds of a melodic singer. You know what I mean? Like the singer of D-Cracks, not to say that he's not melodic, but there's just some toughness to it, and I like it. So that's fucking D-Cracks, man. Check them out. Asphyx. And that's not two words. Ass fix. Like you need some ass and you go get a fix of ass. I guess it's asphyx. It's how you say it. Like, you know, asphyxiation. A-S-P-H-Y-X. I've been listening to Asphyx quite a bit. They have a new album coming out soon. I don't think it's out. It's not out yet. They released a single. But, you know, I've been listening just whatever to their catalog. And they're one of the bands I've been trying to atone for because I've been ignoring them for the last 30 some odd years. They've been around since I was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. And I'm just now saying, hey, man, they're cool. But they're a Dutch metal band. There you got some doom elements, a lot of crust elements. I can see a lot of crust bands that have totally been influenced by Asphyx. But yeah, I've been listening to them. Steve Earle has a new record out called JT, and it's a very sad premise. It's a very sad, I don't know, man, idea for a record. His son, Justin Towns Earl, passed away. And, you know, if you know Steve Earl or Justin Towns Earl, they're both musicians. They're both great musicians. I'm a fan of both of them, but Justin Towns passed away. And Steve Earl came out with a cover album of his son's songs. And if that's not the most beautiful fucking thing you can think of, I don't know what could be more of a fitting tribute for a musician dad to his musician son, but it must have been heart-wrenching to make, you know. It's just, I can't even imagine what it took to make that record emotionally, but it's a great record, you know, a father playing his son's songs. It is what it is, you know. So, yeah, check out Steve Earle's album, JT. So, aside from music, I've been listening to a lot of old school sci-fi radio. And this is some stuff I've been into for a long time. But I just found it. And I found it on Spotify, actually. There's a whole Spotify playlist someone put up. I don't know if it's... I think it might be almost every single episode of Dimension X and X minus one. And they're all on the same playlist and it's amazing. So Dimension X was a sci-fi show that had 50 episodes that aired from 1950 to 1951. And X minus one had 126 episodes that aired from 1954 to 1958. And they're all just like 1950 sci-fi, man. Radio sci-fi. There's a lot of loud beeps and loud noises, and all I can say is if you're hung over, please do not listen to this show with headphones on or on a loud speaker or loudly at all, because there's so many loud beeps and loud hums and loud futuristic sounds. Like everything in the future just beeps. And it's kind of annoying. You don't even have to be hungover, actually. It's just annoying sometimes. But the stories are so good. You know, everyone ends up in jail as a being a crackpot. It's a lot of those the cops and detectives trying to figure out who saw an alien or who didn't, and you know, they all actually come in contact with them, and the rest of their cop buddies or detective buddies think they're just fucking insane because they're the only ones that saw it. They're the only ones that saw what they saw, but they're not crazy. But they are crazy, and they all end up getting hauled off to jail or a psych ward, or, you know, it's just, you gotta have fun with it, man. I mean, it led to everything that we have going on today in the sci-fi world. It's the predecessor, man. It's just what they thought the world would be like in the 80s and the 90s, and it's really cool to listen back that far and see what their thoughts were. So I can't recommend Dimension X or X-1 any more than I am right now. They are phenomenal and fun as fuck. So that's what I have been listening to. Now, I haven't gotten any new reviews or any new ratings in the last month or so. So that's kind of a bummer. But, you know, it is what it is. All I can say is please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. If you use Apple Podcasts, it really helps the show be more visible to people who don't know about it. It would be really great if I had more ratings and reviews. That's it. That's all I can really say. But, hey, hit me up on social media. Anything you want to say, I would love to hear from you. LostRhetoricPodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook, @LostRhetoricPod. On Instagram, @LostRhetoricPodcast. Anything you want to say, for good or ill, write me. I would love to hear from you. Yeah, man. So let's get into this episode. Now, tonight, it's a bit different. So, I mean, I promised that I wasn't going to get too different this year. But the first episode, it's slightly different in the sense that my guest is a musician who is a friend from my childhood that I've recently gotten back into contact with. So, that being said, his name is Grim Deeds, and he and I spend more time talking about ourselves than I normally spend talking about with my guests. So we have a lot to catch up on, and we talk a lot about music, and we talk a lot about our hometown and our experience in our hometown of Winchester, Virginia. And that is the focus of this episode, which is, you know, about old haunts and ghosts of Winchester, Virginia, because, hey, that's what Grim Deeds and I have in common, man. It's where we grew up, and that's what we ended up talking about. So, without further ado, I'm not going to spoil it as usual. Let's just get into it, you know. And just so you know, we talk about a fair amount of haunts in our hometown, but we didn't even really scratch the surface because there are a lot of spots in the area that have these little hauntings, little sightings that just like persist. So yeah, just to let you know, if you're a Winchester ghost expert, sorry, we didn't cover it all. We didn't even come close, but we covered what interested us, I guess. And we covered what, you know, we felt like talking about. So here it is, man. Very, very local, very personable episode of Lost Rhetoric here with Grim Deeds and myself talking our hometown, man. The ghost of Winchester, Virginia. Here we go.
Hey, what's up, Dustin?
Hey, it's been over 20 years, I think it's safe to say, since I've talked to you. Good to see you, man.
Likewise, man. How you been?
Oh, well, 2021's off to a crazy start, but we're holding things down here in Foster City. How about you?
About the same, man. Craziness abounds. It seems like it's just an extension of last year.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, it's like I just turned 40 and it's like, how do you feel? Well, I feel 39.
Yeah.
It's just the difference.
Yeah, I turned 40 back in May, like we're probably around the same age. So
yeah, man.
Yeah, new milestones. So hopefully there's some lessons to be learned from all the craziness.
Yeah, man. Oh, shit. Well, we'll see. We will see. Well, with me today, Grim Deeds.
Hails.
Hails indeed. Yeah, I already called you Dustin. I know you as Dustin.
Yeah. So we went to high school together.
This
makes this extra special for me because the community that cares about Grim Deeds isn't necessarily like part of the community that I grew up with. And I don't keep in touch with a lot of people from Winchester, but it's really rad when people like you reach out and, you know, I always knew that you and I had stuff in common, like musical interests and just kind of a way of looking at the world. So it's really satisfying to be able to reconnect with people from my past who can appreciate, you know, the things that I've tried to do since.
Yeah, for real, man. I mean, we're going to get into that a lot too, because, you know, today's episode is basically about our hometown in a way. But before we get into all that, so we did grow up in a, you know, small city, small town in Northern Virginia, but not to be confused with Nova, because I've had arguments with people who are from the quote unquote Nova area, and they get mad at me when I say I'm from Northern Virginia because it's not Nova. And I say, I know it's not Nova, but I'm from farther north than you are.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what people mostly think of when they hear Nova is like the DC metro area, which we were pretty far from. We were like 70 miles from DC, but
yeah,
we were still northern. It's kind of a weird place to grow up because we were close enough to the city and close enough to the culture to be able to access it, but we were also pretty close to West Virginia and a lot of wilderness and a lot of you know, kind of like a cultural time machine. The further you drive out of DC, it kind of sets your cultural clock back 50 years or more.
Yeah. And 10 more miles outside of Winchester, it's 10 more years in a way.
Oh yeah. My dad's in Strasburg, which is just 10 miles from Winchester's. And I grew up before moving to Winchester, I lived in Stephen City. So like that's, you know, that's very different than Winchester, even in terms of how much more, conservative and, desolate it is in certain ways.
Yeah, man. Stephen City is like a natural extension of the city. It's Stephen. A lot of people move to Stephen City. It's actually kind of a nice place, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. When I grew up there was really not much going on at all. And Winchester seemed pretty far. Like to go to the Apple Blossom Mall was a big day trip for us, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, yeah, I grew up in Winchester proper on the north side. And then I moved to the south side, actually very much close to just a small drive, short drive to Stephen City. So Stephen City since seventh grade to me is just next door in a way, you know?
Okay.
So
we're talking like maybe near Kernstown. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. My family now lives like a 2-minute drive from Kernstown. That's where I ended up moving. Sorry. I mean, to all the listeners that obviously don't know Winchester at all, this is going to happen a lot tonight. Cause you know, we just got back into touch like a month ago or something. And it's funny because, you know, it's not like we were super good friends growing up, but we knew each other. And then I, you know, I've been listening to this podcast, The Dummy Room, off and on, and I've mentioned it on the show. And then I realized you had been a guest twice.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fucking hilarious and awesome. So I hit you up and I was like, oh, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, man. The Pop Punk podcast, the Dummy Room, is a great one and a, definitely a great resource for people who are interested in punk rock and especially the pop punk stuff that you and I like. And yeah, I've pretty much immersed myself in that world, that little bubble, as they call it, and been pretty active member of it since about 2007. So, you know, I know plenty of people in that little scene and have tried to contribute to it as much as I can.
Well, yeah, and you have contributed quite a bit because I've looked at your catalog and it's extensive. There's a lot of songs, Grim Deeds.
Yeah.
Very, I think the word prolific always comes to mind because you're constantly writing songs and you're constantly releasing songs. But you're also, it seems like you're constantly collaborating and you got side projects and you've got solo side projects like Dumburger and the Gungans and... you know, but you also got the Cloven Altar metal band with your Swedish buddy who I don't know, but and you got your old bands.
Well, you and I both have plenty of history with making music and being creative, and I sensed that even back in high school that we had that in common. But I think something else that's true about both of us is we didn't discover that we really were passionate about playing music and creating music until much later. Cause I didn't even pick up a guitar till I was 25.
Yeah. I tried to play guitar in high school and my mom bought me a $100 Lotus, which is, I think, made in the same factory as PV. It was essentially a PV guitar.
Nice.
From Shenandoah Music. And I tried to play it. I had classes in high school that allowed me to just kind of like do my own thing. Mm-hmm. There was a really cool class called Language of Music that literally you did roll and then they just let you play whatever the fuck you wanted for an hour.
Whoa.
I don't know if you knew about that class. I took it for 2 years and I got to, that's where I learned to, that I learned that I knew how to play drums. I just hopped on the drum kit because I'd been playing go-go beats and whatever on desks for years. And then I just got on the drum kit and like seriously knew what to do. And it felt so natural, but then I was like, I'm going to play a guitar. So my mom eventually bought me a guitar and I sucked at it, and I tried to play like Moon Over Marin by Dead Kennedys, and I was trying to play like Minor Threat songs and like fucking Agnostic Front songs and Rage Against the Machine songs, and I was terrible, and I just gave it up until my now wife bought me an acoustic guitar for like my 26th or 27th birthday.
Nice.
And I was unemployed, and she bought me a chord book, and I just sat on the porch every day and started, and oh, she taught me drop tuning. So I started playing in drop C, drop D.
Yeah.
That's it, man. The rest is history. But yeah, later in life, it's like I was in bands in Virginia as a vocalist. Mm-hmm. I was in bands in college as a drummer.
Mm.
Not a very good one. And then when I moved to Portland, it was like drums and vocals. Then it became guitars and vocals, which is shit I had no idea I knew how to do until I started doing it.
Oh yeah, and back, you definitely do. You know what you're doing. I've checked out your stuff, and it's really impressive, man. It sounds great.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, but it was just one of those things in Virginia, back in Winchester. It was no outlet. I didn't even know how to start a band. I did start a band once with some mutual friends of ours. That was really terrible, but it was like really fun at the same time.
Yeah,
and we never played any shows or anything, but we would just get together and try to play. You know, it was like one of those bands where the bassist was the vocalist, but he couldn't do both at the same time. So when he started screaming, he'd stop playing. It was like that kind of band, which was...
I have some memories of shows that happened in the Winchester area, you know, in my teenage years. And I mean, everybody was into music, but it seemed like there wasn't as much confidence to follow through and be persistent with the bands, at least in my circle of friends, because we were all just into skating and listening to music. And I was obsessed with listening to music, but... Yeah, to be organized enough to really commit to a practice schedule and try writing songs or even learning songs together, it was like, you know, too much to ask. But there were the local heroes. There was Ice Nine, there was Monolith, bands that, you know, we would try and come out and see. And I ended up working at the Apple Blossom Mall movie theater with, I think Brian Bailey was in Monolith, and he was like one of the managers there. And Yeah, there's some lore. There was another band called World of Hate that was a death metal band from Winchester, and they're actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
And this other guy that went to Ayler Middle School named John Swadley played in some death metal bands that were excellent. That was one good thing about growing up in Winchester is a lot of the rednecks were super deep into the metal scene, and that's how I discovered a lot of extreme metal early on was through these guys.
Yeah, man. When I was growing up, I was not in the extreme metal scene, but I listened to, but you know, I went to shows at the band room and Brian, mm-hmm. I think Brian was the drummer, correct?
Yeah, you might be right. The dude I worked with, though, was the bass player and vocalist.
Oh, never mind. That might be his brother.
I forget if he was Brian or the other guy. And then the guitarist was sick, too, but I don't know if he was related to the... It was a three-piece, basically.
Yeah, I forget all of their names. Unfortunately, I used to hang out with their drummer. I'd see him, and, you know, we'd drink together and do whatever... when I was in college, before I moved away, and
yeah,
I think he unfortunately passed away.
Oh man, what a bummer. Hey, they were a great band. Like I remember even songs that they played in their set list. They did Blackened by Metallica, but they do it with death metal vocals, which was rad. And they had some originals and stuff. And I think they put out a couple albums, but
yeah,
you know, like they're on the Metal Archives if you go on there and check. I think they eventually kind of went for a more new metal groove type of direction, but I didn't really, I didn't keep tabs on them for very long. But,
local you know, heroes, man. I mean, they were doing shit above and beyond what anyone was doing in our hometown at that time. They had their own fucking practice space where they threw mm-hmm. shows. That was huge.
Oh, that band room place was rad. I felt like such a rebel going there.
Yeah.
You know, it was all graffitied up. It was in that industrial zone under that sketchy bridge in that alley.
Yep.
And like you walk up the stairs and you're in there.
Yeah,
you know, like a lot of the dudes hanging out there were much older too. Because for me being like 17 to see dudes in their 20s there blew my mind. You know,
yeah.
And they're coolers full of beer or whatever. And yeah, I was really stoked to get to go to see some of the shows. I saw a few hardcore shows there.
Yeah, me too. What's funny little side note? The guys that have the Post Rhetoric show that is, you know, this show's after show basically. JPX mm-hmm. and Stuntman Mike. They were in a band that actually took over. They practiced at the band room after Monolith gave it up.
Wow.
And they used to hang out there and whatever. And now I think Stuntman Mike's sister, who's a good friend of mine, works out of there now because it's like an office building or something.
Oh, what a trip.
I know,
oh,
right? Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Because
that's crazy. Just... It's funny to hear about your journey, you know, because it's so similar to mine. Like I had a guitar in high school too. And didn't barely, you know, I took a couple lessons at Shenandoah Music and then I sold it to Carrie Dyke. She bought it for like $50. And then I never touched the guitar again until age 25.
Yeah, man.
And yeah, like you, I just kind of discovered like, oh, I can kind of keep rhythm pretty well. And, you know, I had a couple other experience being in bands, but I was just following everybody else's lead. Like I sang vocals in a band in college. And I played bass in a hardcore band in Charlottesville, but that was my first experience playing an instrument in a band. And I was just, whatever they had, I was trying to learn. And it wasn't until much later that I was like, I want to try doing it myself. But I'm glad I did because that has become a pretty big focus in my life, you know, ever since.
Absolutely. And besides the music, though, you have your blog, right?
Yeah.
You interview quite a few, I mean, everyone from the fucking punk rock, pop punk scene. You're all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, man. The blog was a project that I wanted to start just because I've always been a talker, you know, you can probably tell. And I love to interview people. So one of the great things about the internet age and the fact that a lot of this pop punk stuff is past its prime now is it's really easy to reach out to people and find them and ask them to do an interview, and I have lots of questions for them. So it's been a great hobby, and it turned into something cool, you know, like another little contribution to the community. Mm-hmm. And then just recently, back in October, I started a label that I've put out about.
No way.
Yeah, it's my version though. You know, we have a physical release is coming. It's going to be a compilation, but I've put out about 27 singles and a couple little EPs, mostly pop punk stuff. But yeah, a few that I'm really proud of. And the same thing, you know, you just reach out to people. Hey, you got some songs, anything extra, or you want to contribute to this little project that I'm doing? And I got a pretty good response from it. Just ended up paying the bands right when the new year hit. And that felt pretty good, you know, to give back. And that's kind of like what I try to do as a pop punk scenester is not just make it about me, but like show support for the bands that I'm into. And if people, you know, care about what I do, then I want to try to use that influence to spread the good vibes all around.
Right. Yeah, man. And I know I've never done it, but I've had friends that have done it and put out records that I've been involved with that run, you know, that run their own independent label. And it's definitely a labor of love. And mm-hmm. to be able to take care of the bands on the label is got to be pretty gratifying feeling, or at least, you know, give them a little something back.
Yeah.
Cause it's a grind, man. But I was, right before we got on here, like a couple hours ago, I was watching your, shit, I'm going to butcher the name of the song, but the I Can't Listen to NOFX or something.
Oh, yeah. I Can't Listen to NOFX. Yeah.
Dude, first off, amazing song. I support that sentiment 100%, but I've been in that camp since the beginning. Oh. But that's a whole other thing about a record label. And he seems to treat his artists actually fairly well, I think. Yeah. I don't really know. But yeah. as a band, I've never been into him. Anyway, that song, there's a video I think you can find on YouTube.
Yep. It's got the most hits for sure. Because Cedric, the metal guy, plays on that. Yeah. Let me just say a little bit about that song, because, you know, I've moved from Winchester out to California. Well, actually, it was from Charlottesville. I lived in Charlottesville a couple of years before moving out here. But, you know, I live in the Bay Area, so we're pretty close to San Francisco. And I spent a lot of time in the set, like the Fat Records office, because they have a record store there that they would open weekly for a while. And I got to know a lot of the people that worked there and became friends with some of them and stuff. So I've had, you know, some interactions with Fat Mike and stuff, and some of them were fine. But there are a couple of encounters that I observed or was a part of where I was pretty bummed out, because like I felt he was an asshole or, you know, whatever. but at the same time, I've always really respected his songwriting. I think he's one of the best songwriters. Even if you don't like NOFX, I think, you know, if you look at his lyrics and the way he crafts his songs, it's very unmistakably his own. And he's been very influential. So the thing about that song is, I've always been a NOFX fan, but I didn't want to write a tribute that was like positive, because that would just be lame. So I just made it a diss song instead. And I also used it as an opportunity to air some of my own like grievances. But, you know, I kind of like, it's been a bit of a chip on my shoulder, because, you know, reading through the YouTube comments and stuff, some people would say like, oh, well, you're just pissed off because, you know, you're not as successful as they are, you know, or something like that. And I didn't want it to be that type of song. I just kind of wanted it to be a song that people would think was weird, because it obviously sounds a lot like NOFX. I was trying to make it sound like them, but it's just tearing them a new one.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And yeah, your friend, the dude from Cloven Altar, right? What mm-hmm. did you say his name was?
His name is Cedric Forsberg. He lives in Sweden. He is an amazing Shredder. Musician. Yeah. Oh yeah. And he's got like, I mean, if you think I'm prolific with the pop punk stuff, in terms of his prolificness, he's heads above, because he has like countless metal projects and one-man bands that he's done with multiple albums where he's played every instrument and done vocals in some cases. He's now the drummer of the Polish heavy metal band called Crystal Viper, which is a power metal band. And they've been really, you know, doing well, you know, for the past decade. So he's, you know, a very talented guy. And we've been friends for a long time. I just, you know, connected him through the internet, and we ended up doing the Cloven Altar project together, and that kind of fizzled out because I felt like enough people do that style and I'm better at doing pop punk anyway, but he was down to help me with some stuff. So there's two Grim Deeds albums where he does all the instrumentation, I just do the vocals.
Awesome. Yeah, man, he's a great player. It was fun to watch, but mm-hmm. yeah I don't know, I could relate to that song just because I'm not a NOFX fan, but it's strictly their music.
Yeah.
Like I've always respected the lyrics and where they're coming from and politics and all. We're kind of on the same foot with that stuff, but their music I just don't like. I just never been a fan. Never been a fan of that sound. But anyway,
no, I
digress. This has definitely been the longest I've talked off topic for sure.
Yeah, we got to get to the weird stuff.
For all the listeners out there. But, you know, like I said, we're just now catching back up for the first time in over 20. It's, I don't even know.
Yeah, because I assume we haven't really spoken since high school graduation. We're both 99, right?
No, see, I'm 98.
Oh, so then
that's right.
Add an extra year.
Yeah, we talked. Yeah, I left. I left Winchester in 2000, and I go back way more often than you do, we've determined. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, Winchester is home. It comes up a lot. This podcast is, you know, my first episode was with my old man, who was born in Winchester and grew up in the area all around. And he's been on the show 6 times. He's like one of those guys. He's always going to be a guest every couple months or so. He's going to be on the show. He's just a staple. He's a big reason. And you know, when I grew up, I didn't know he was into this stuff, and I wasn't really into this stuff. And it just kind of came out in the last year or two where we just started having these phone conversations about whatever. And I was like, oh shit, you know, the old man's into the same shit I'm into. And then he actually has some stuff to say, and he is so into it, right?
That's awesome.
But the first episode was about Harry Joe Turner, which is an abduction story from Winchester.
Like extraterrestrial type abduction?
Yeah.
The Grays?
Yeah, essentially, I think.
I've always been super into that, too. And I don't know if you ever were familiar with the book Communion by Whitley Strieber, back in the day.
Absolutely.
That was my first, like, I remember my parents for some reason had a copy of that book, and I just picked it up and looked at it as a kid, and it scared me so bad. Yeah. It disturbed me so much that it really has stuck with me all these years. And that's what I think really started my whole interest in the supernatural stuff. I mean, maybe I was a little bit into the lore of ghosts and hauntings and things like that, paranormal things, but the alien abduction stuff definitely started with Whitley Strieber and Communion. Yeah, that's great, man, that your dad's into that stuff. That must be a really cool way for you two to connect and relate to each other.
Yeah, it's nice. It's fun. I mean, we talk all the time anyway. Well, you know, not all the time, but when we talk forever. But
that's awesome, man.
The funniest thing about it is he doesn't have the internet. He doesn't have a cell phone. He's never listened to an episode. He can't listen to an episode. He has no means to listen to
an
episode. He just keeps doing the show.
Wow, that's funny, man. It sounds like my dad, because my dad, he can talk your ear off too. It's probably where I get it from, but he's, you know, similarly not very tech savvy, and he would love to contribute but probably wouldn't know how to listen to it either.
Yeah, he'll get around to listening to it eventually one of these days, you know. Post COVID, my brother can go over there and like play him an episode on his phone or something, you know what I mean? Like, something's gonna happen. But yeah, so you know, but with that, and like, you know, I've had multiple guests from Winchester, and then there's the Post Rhetoric Boys who do their podcast from Winchester.
Nice.
Yeah. And they'll, awesome. You know, their next episode will be about this episode, which is.
Oh, wow. Well, that's pretty cool. I'll have to figure out which guys they are, because you and I know a lot of the same people. And
yeah,
you know, you mentioned some names when we were chatting the other night that I haven't thought about in ages.
And I know.
Oh man, all these memories start flooding back.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. And, it's weird looking at your hometown from like kind of a different set of eyes, because I've been researching this episode about old Winchester haunts and the history of just ghost sightings. And I guess, I mean, that's a lot that Winchester has going for it in the realm of the weird, because it's like, that's what this podcast is about. And I wanted you to be a guest, and it's like, what do we want to talk about?
Yeah.
And this is naturally what came up. It's like, all right, let's talk about weird shit from our hometown, which I love. And I, you know, I think I planned on approaching it at some point, but now I like the organic vibe of just us coming together. And then it's like, hey, let's look into this weird shit. Cause when I was growing up, and I don't know about you, you have more experiences. I have zero experiences with anything weird in Winchester at all. But you have some experiences. And then when I was looking at all of the hot spots in town, I mean, there are a ton.
Yeah.
And
it's known for it, man.
You know,
like even in school, I would always go to the school library and look for books about spooky stuff. And at every school that I attended, there was a section where you could find not only, you know, true accounts of hauntings or ghost stories, but there was also specifically regional stuff. Like, here's some from Winchester, here's some from DC, Virginia, or like that area. And I started to realize, like, wow, Virginia is such a you know, story, has such a story in history anyway, in American history, of Revolutionary War, Civil War, slavery, you know, and ages upon ages of Native American history too. So it's just, it's rife with kind of like the ingredients for haunting and spookiness and lingering spirituality. And right. like I mentioned in our conversation, religion is a big deal where we grew up, and not being religious was something that I hadn't even considered up until a certain age, because I was just completely surrounded and immersed in a culture of sort of mandatory Christianity. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it kind of gives rise to more spooky stuff, because I remember growing up, people talking about demons and people talking about dark spirits and all kinds of, you know, stuff like that. And it just kind of fed more into my whole fascination with this realm of weirdness and spirituality.
Right.
And there was a lot of, you know, there were a lot of fears and things that we were taught to stay away from as a kid, you know, like stay away from satanic stuff. And, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so the whole satanic panic was a thing.
With right.
music. And yeah. And then I ended up living in a part of Winchester where there are a lot of old homes and a lot of, you know, close to the downtown mall, where there's plenty of stories about haunted places.
Yeah, man. Old Town is, is where it's at, man. And, you know, speaking of religion in the area, I grew up Catholic and going to, you know, up until, I mean, my family's like the Simpsons, you know. It was like, we'd all go to church and my old man would stay home and watch football and drink beer. And we stopped going to church, I don't even know, early, sixth grade. It was pretty early for me and my brother. And then that was kind of it. But, you know, Catholic household in a sense, but, you know, Catholicism and ghosts, it's like not really a ghost friendly religion, I guess.
Right.
but I don't know. But it made me look into the religious history of the area.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know this really, but there were at very early on a shit ton of Quakers, man. A lot of Quakers. Apple Pie Ridge, very Quaker.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy area. In a spot we're going to get into, Abram's Delight, the oldest house in the city of Winchester, built by a Quaker family. But from what I can gather, Winchester historically is a lot of Quakers, Presbyterian, and Anglican and Lutheran.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe some Baptists too, but yeah, definitely. I actually was forced to attend First Presbyterian Church in Winchester in my middle school years. Yep. Downtown. So I attended that church, and I even got some weird vibes in that place, to be honest, like all around downtown and all around, you know, Old Town Winchester, as they call it, and even where I lived on Washington Street and Braddock Street and some of the parallel places, had a lot of old homes, and we knew some people who, you know, had like well-established claims of ghosts in their home. And I, like I've told you, and we'll probably get into like some of the things that I've experienced, it was something that I just kind of accepted as being part of the environment. And I was, it was kind of weird and kind of scary and fascinating at the same time.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what your experiences were yet, but historically Winchester, we've already talked about it. There is a lot of, you know, French and Indian War, Revolutionary War, kind of goings on in the area. There were no actual battles. There was no actual bloodshed, as far as I know, in the area from those wars.
Right.
But there was a lot of outposts. There was like a jail from the Revolutionary War was in Winchester. George Washington spent a lot of time there. Daniel Morgan, of course, famous rifleman. Yeah, he was, you know, our middle school was named after
him. That was the mascot, right? The rifleman.
Yeah, the rifleman. Yeah. So those wars, even though the area, it was important to those wars, there doesn't seem to be much bloodshed or any attributed to it, you know, between like, I mean, after the European takeover, you know, of course there's native lore and ghosts. And then, you know, once the settlement started to happen, it's a lot of Civil War. It's very Civil War ghost heavy area.
Yeah. And along with that, like slave ghosts, is like a lot of the stories that I would hear are like, you know, you can see slaves like doing, I don't know. I think there was the story about slaves like scrubbing floors in Belgrove or, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, there was like stains of blood from like the slave quarters or something, you know, where whippings would occur and things like that. Man. But yeah, like what I gathered from everything that I heard is that there was predominantly like Civil War era ghost stuff going on in Winchester.
Yeah. And it's pretty constant. What I've gathered about all of the stories that I've read is there's no crazy stories. It's just that the stories are consistent and the ghosts persist and basically do the same thing all the time and are kind of always there.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of my impression too. Cause I never heard any brutal stories about like murders or slayings or people that were wronged in ways that might like explain why their spirit is lingering. But yeah, it was just more like appearances and like consistent presence that you could feel.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, other than the, any slavery related ghost stories, you know, it's a lot of Civil War death soldiers. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, they're all like, they all come from a brutal place. You know what I mean? Like a terrible time for the area.
Yeah, that's well said. That's kind of how I pictured it too. It's just a brutal time where there's plenty of pain and plenty of suffering going around.
Right.
And, a lot of lingering, unresolved feelings probably as well.
Yeah. And I was reading this article about how your religion plays into how you perceive spirits and ghosts. Sure. And if you're even, because I guess 18% of Americans claim to have seen a ghost. That's the statistic. But depending on your religion, it's how you perceive them, which is interesting. You know, because in Catholic, historically, I guess Catholics look at ghosts as like tormented souls or something. You know, and Protestants started changing that and kind of started looking at it as like the work of angels, demons, or like non-human supernatural beings, you know, like kind of making it a little more, I don't know, interesting instead of just like scary as fuck.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point about the cultural and the religious tones. I mean, I think that definitely affected how the stories were told in our area. And I'm in the Bay Area now, so there's all kinds of like Eastern perspectives on spirituality. And where I live, there's a large population of Chinese people, Indian people, Japanese people. Where I used to teach, there's a lot of Filipino people who are mostly Catholic. And then there's Latino culture here and stuff. So there's like all these different ways of looking at it, but it's interesting to consider how each, you know, religion sort of views that spiritual, you know, the supernatural stuff.
Right. And in terms of Winchester, it just seems like it's just a tourist thing now. Like it's embraced and it's just a part of the legacy. And I mean, fuck, man, there's an old town ghost tour that you can go on. I think the guy who owns Murphy's Beverage there in Old Town used to, or still does, hold these old town ghost tours where they kind of just take you around and show you the spots where there's notorious ghosts. Because all through Old Town Pedestrian Mall, I mean, there's a handful of spots. Taylor Hotel.
Yeah, you could do it. It's almost like a bar crawl, but it's ghosts instead.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. And then, you know, one of the first ones is Indian Alley, which is just a block off Old Town. And, you know, the Native American presence in the area, obviously very strong in Sherando, Shawnee, Iroquois, all whatever. But in Indian Alley, which is an actual alley in Old Town Winchester, there are rumors, there are constant sightings of very tall Native Americans being seen, the spirits of them being seen on the street. And there is historical evidence that the natives in the area were actually sometimes a foot taller than the Europeans.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
Yeah. So that Indian Alley itself, which, you know, we've both and many people have been up and down it many, many times, is apparently a hot spot. And I've never, like I said at the beginning, everything we talk about tonight, I've never seen a fucking thing. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you turn right from Indian Alley and go down that hallway that leads you to the walking mall, right, and then you take a left towards, I guess, Snow White Grill.
Right.
There's a hotel right there, like an upstairs inn, and that's famously haunted as well.
Taylor, right? Taylor Hotel.
Yeah. And for a while, a girl I knew, Avery Snyder, her mom was like managing it or running it or something, and yeah, we would hear about the stories there, and it was just kind of like you were saying, kind of a tourist attraction almost, but it was well known, well documented.
Really, it's really nice. It's a really nice hotel. It was renovated. So now it's like a apartment and restaurant space, you know, and they have whatever outdoor events. But I guess the kitchen staff has reported that grease burners are often turned off at night and will be found on in the morning. Hmm. And one cook installed surveillance cameras to see what was going on. And he just saw that the burners were turned off by the night staff, though they were found on again in the morning. Like, that sounds malicious to me. I mean, like these ghosts.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
But you know, there's Civil War ghost stories.
Well, around downtown, like you gave me a list of all the different haunts, and there were like 10 places where I was like immediately like, yeah, I know that spot, and everything's so close together. There's plenty of sightings documented there, and if you go, you know, up the street, up the hill to where the residences start, like on South Washington Street and Braddock Street and stuff. Like I lived at 117 South Washington Street during high school, and the home that I was in, I'm sure, was at least 100 years old. And I felt a lot of weird creepiness while living there, even though there were like seven of us in the house at the time. And, you know, sometimes I'd be there alone, and I didn't like it, you know, and I was old enough to not be scared of stuff unless I felt like some kind of reasonable threat or something was there. But there were a couple times like where I would hear sounds or feel a presence in the house that just made me want to leave. And I think I told you there was a time when I was by myself, and a gust of wind just completely blew the front doors open, wide open, and I just like ran out, didn't come back, didn't lock the door, and eventually returned. But yeah, sleeping there, like there were always a lot of weird creaks and kind of whines that you would hear. Like there was a door on the second floor that had this weird, I don't know, angle to the way that there was a crack in the seal. And so when it would get really windy, there would be this just super loud moan that would come through the house, and it was really frightening to me. And then there was a third floor, which was mainly like an attic, but we kind of converted it into like a little movie watching zone. And that place felt super creepy to me. And so I just always felt like on edge because of this spiritual, you know, element when I was there. And my sister was friends with a guy named Monford Russell, who lived not far from us. And his house was famously haunted as well. And he would give us stories about, you know, being in the den playing Super Nintendo, but then feeling like suddenly, like you just feel like someone's there, you know, you feel the presence. He may have even mentioned like a cold sensation as well.
Yeah.
My memory's kind of a little bit spotty on those details, but it was something that he would casually talk about and be like, yeah, you know, the other night we had some friends over, like we definitely felt it. And yeah, just goes, I mean, that was something that was interesting now that I reflect back on growing up in Winchester, is you never felt surprised to hear about hauntings or ghost stories. It was very embedded into the experience of living there.
Yeah. And that reminds me of, there is a story from the old G&M music store in Old Town, which I used to go to when I was a kid. And I remember I saw like an Eddie Van Halen ripoff, or maybe it was the real deal kind of guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I think that's when I fell in love with like, I want to play guitar, was that G&M music. But that's where Patsy Cline, you know, who's from our hometown, for the listeners who don't know, that's where she got her first guitar and made some of her first recordings, was in that G&M music store building in Old Town Winchester. But visitors claim to have experienced a coldness and have felt this. Well, they say that they feel the spirit of Patsy in the building, which is interesting. I don't know. That sounds a bit silly to me. Maybe not. But the coldness and whatever, that's what is reported from that building, which is not too far from your place, you know?
Yeah, I definitely remember that spot. And Patsy Cline, yeah, her spirit in a sense was something that was also really like tied to the identity of Winchester. I mean, that's even what I would say to people if they ask me, where's Winchester? I'd be like, oh, it's a place where Patsy Cline used to live. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the, like where we spent a lot of our time was in the part of town that had such history to it, you know? I mean, the buildings, the streets had been there for so long, you know? And I think we just all kind of took it for granted, but imagine you know, all the experiences, all the combined happenings, it's sure to, you know, have a lot of those ingredients that would result in lingering spirits.
Well, I mean, just think about it. Like the next thing I want to talk about is Abram's Delight, which is the oldest house in Winchester, built by the Quaker family, the Hollingsworth Quaker family from, I mean, whatever, they've been there forever, since like the 17th century or something. But it was built in 1754. And this house, and there's a cabin on the property too, it's right off Valley Road or Pleasant Valley Road. And it's right, it's basically like in Jim Barnett Park.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's there, but it's so almost nondescript in a way. They've built a park around it where we all went as kids. And that's where I had football practice. And I would just go play at the fucking Christensen Family Land, or you know, the basketball courts are there. Shenandoah University is right behind it. And, but right in the middle of all this shit, there's Abram's Delight, which is this small old limestone house. And it's off one of the, probably the busiest road in this, in Winchester, Pleasant Valley Road. I would say the one that, you know, is probably the most annoying to deal with.
Yeah, I agree. dangerous to cross too, because we used to walk across it to get to the Jim Barnett Park to go skate.
Well, when I had detention, we used to actually get into the sewers, the big tunnels, and walk walk under it.
That's wild.
You could cross it. Anyway. And it was all dry under there too. It was interesting. Luckily we never ran into a creep. But Abram's Delight is, we went there, I don't know if you ever did, but we went there on a field trip in, I don't know, elementary school, middle school. It's just that place. It's the most historic place in the city, basically. But it was restored in 1951. And when the carpenters that were restoring it claimed to have seen a shadowy figure of a tall guy dressed in Quaker clothing and a hat up on the front steps into the house. And when they came back, I'm butchering it, but they saw him, they went away, they came back 10 minutes later, and he was gone, basically.
Yeah.
So they saw him, disappeared, typical ghost shit. You know, that's what they call it, ghosting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you were saying like field trips. I don't think I went on any field trips to Abrams Delight. I was aware of it though. But the field trip that I took a couple of times was to Belgrove Plantation, which is outside of town.
And that let's get into that in a second.
There's one more thing
I want to say about Abrams Delight, and this is the biggie. That's the daughter Mary, who's like the daughter of David Hollingsworth, mm-hmm. who is or the house was built by Isaac Hollingsworth, right? So I think David is, I don't fucking know, his great grandson or something, and Mary mm-hmm. is David's daughter or something. And she died in the building.
Oh.
And she was masculine. She's like 6 feet tall, and she would disguise herself as a man and drive a chuck wagon out west mm-hmm. during the Civil War to make money. And she actually became engaged to a woman.
But
came home without the woman and unmarried. And there was like a whole scandal weirdness between her and the other woman's family, apparently. But yeah, so that's just like mind boggling in and of itself.
Yeah, for sure. That adds a whole nother layer because that, you know,
especially with the times and the area mm-hmm. and, you know, that it's, to me, that's amazing. I love it. It's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. we all love that. But at the time, oof.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been accepted.
No, especially from a Quaker family and in the South. And well, I don't know if they were Quakers at the time, honestly. I really don't know if Mary was a Quaker. I just know Quakers built Abrams Delight.
Sure. And when I think of the Quaker style, I mean, I'm not like very well versed in their
me either
religious practices, but it seems to me a bit more like fire and brimstone, like Old Testament style, and like
mm-hmm.
don't color outside the lines at all.
Absolutely.
So yeah, if she had, you know, different orientation at that time, and you know, that would definitely have been not looked upon favorably. And it could, you know, it's when you think of ghosts and spirits, if people who die with a chip on their shoulder or people who die with an unresolved
you know,
feeling are the ones to me that would be more likely to stick around,
more likely to be a ghost. If there's ghost criteria.
Yeah, like what unfinished business do you have?
Exactly. So yeah, man, I mean, that makes sense to me. So when she mm-hmm. died, her sister Annie didn't tell anybody until the next day, and they left Mary's body in the house. So yeah, they say her spirit's still there. And she's like the big haunting, like the guy I was talking about that the carpenter saw in the 50s. I don't know mm-hmm. if that was a one-time deal or mm-hmm. what, but Mary seems to be the consistent haunting presence in Abrams Delight. And, you know, employees, because it's basically a museum now.
Mm-hmm.
And employees say that she does things for attention, like she'll knock over a vase or lay it flat or pull it a chest out into the middle of the floor. Or they'll be like, they've heard the loud sound of crystal breaking during storms, and then they go up and there's no broken crystal, and they'll find the volume on the stereos turned up when, you know, no one was around, and then whatever. A lot of attention-seeking activity by this Mary like lady.
Poltergeist type stuff. cry for acknowledgement or attention.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I didn't really know that about Abrams. I just remember being in there, and there was a portrait, a painting on the wall, and they said the eyes would follow you. You know those paintings where they say no matter where you are in the room, it's looking at you? There is a painting of someone in that building. I remember everywhere you went, it was looking at you.
That's interesting, because there's a lot of the homes that I've been in Winchester and outside of Winchester have a lot of Civil War era portraits of various people, and that's a presence that can even have a little bit of a spiritual vibe to it, you know.
Absolutely,
like old houses with these people just kind of there looking at you. There, the Welcome Center in Winchester, which is near the downtown mall, I think it's the next block over, like not Loudoun Street, but across the street where the court building is, there's like a Welcome Center that has a lot of history and might have had like an art gallery or something. But I remember going in there, and part of the experience was learning about local ghosts and hauntings and stuff too.
It's just, yeah, it's embedded in the city's history. It's just a big part of it now. Sure. But you know, it's a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Is what it is, a lot of it. But yeah, let's you brought up Belle Grove. And Belle Grove is outside of Winchester, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was towards Lord Fairfax Community College, kind of out towards
Middletown.
Middletown, yeah. And it was a big plantation, big beautiful building, and we took a few field trips there. And every time we went, part of our field trip experience was hearing about the ghosts. And I think in that situation, they were talking about like the ghosts of slaves that mm-hmm. were cleaning or had a presence that was spotted, like, you know, well documented and on a regular basis. And yeah, man, I remember thinking about that, and you know, nobody really asked questions. It's just like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I remember getting books from local libraries that had Belle Grove in it as an example of like a haunted place, like local Winchester ghosts and stuff. That one was always there. Anyway, that's what was on my mind as we would walk around, you know, tour the grounds and stuff. But we would always go during the day, so it didn't feel too creepy. But
right,
yeah, old building just out there, and plenty of history out there too.
Yeah, man. Let me see here, because I didn't like look too much into Belle Grove, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's the big plantation house that was like right literally across the street from, or on the same side, but across a pasture from the community college. Am I
wrong
about that?
Yeah, real close, really close. Yeah. Just across whatever that street was, like Route 11 or something.
Yeah. But yeah, apparently very, very, very well known, and there's tours of it.
Yeah.
And I don't really know too much about it. I didn't really look too much into the Belle Grove situation, but I know it's a big tourist attraction
mm-hmm.
In the area. But so many, there's a lot of paranormal investigative groups from Virginia.
Interesting. Makes sense.
And I know they've been there. Yeah. Some of them, they like go and make videos and stuff. And there is one, and this is kind of deviating from the Belle Grove thing, which unfortunately I don't really have much to say.
Yeah. Mine's just based on what I remember, you know, and all the tours I've been on, they'd always would bring it up.
But I came across this show, and this will lead us into a couple other little haunts.
Mm-hmm.
There's this show that I found on Amazon called Gas, Grub, and Ghosts. And there's only 5 episodes on Amazon. And the 5th episode is all about Winchester. So Winchester is popular enough to have its own episode on a paranormal investigative television show.
That I have to check that out. Because, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of a few other spots that I don't even know if we brought up in conversation. But did I mention anything about the Cinema 6 movie theater having a ghost? Because I worked there off and on, you know, part time for a while. And that was like the projector room is apparently haunted in that space. I don't know if it's still a movie theater, but there was a lot of times when like employees would have to go and get supplies because that's where they kept all the candy and the extra boxes and cups.
Right.
And yeah, there would be like, yeah, it's like haunted up there. Like, just be aware. And that was part of my orientation of working there. So I don't know if anyone else can vouch for it, but the movie theater upstairs was a haunt.
Dude, that was classic
in my head.
I mean, mm-hmm. I used to go there, but obviously I didn't work there. Snuck in there a couple times.
Yeah, it was easy. Easy to do, especially if you knew anybody that worked at the ticket counter.
Oh man, but A couple of the things that this Gas, Grub, and Ghost people brought up are downtown.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, well, their main focus, they didn't mention the mall or the Apple Blossom Mall, but the Old Town Mall was a big focus. But they actually went there to investigate a woman's house who she thought was haunted by her husband. So this show, I just want to talk about it really quick because, and I'm not a shit talker, Dustin.
Okay. Yeah. You seem like a pretty nice guy,
but this show is not good. They seem like very, very nice people. They're part of the Virginia Paranormal Investigations, right? But I can see their concept of a television show where they travel. Their whole tag, well, they're not their tagline, but they live somewhere in Virginia and they investigate in Virginia and they hit the road and they stop for food. And it's like they're trying to do a paranormal and food show.
Yeah, yeah.
But
genre crossing, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, they talk about like we're heading to do this investigative report in Winchester, but most importantly, we're gonna show you what happens on the way there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they're focused on, is most importantly, we're gonna show you what we do on the way there. And what do they do on the way there, while they're there, and after they leave? What do you think they do? Where do you think they go to eat?
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
Sheets.
No, that's where they decided, that of all places.
They love
not the Snow White Grill, not any of the local great places to eat.
They love Sheets. So, and if anyone who doesn't know, anyone not from the area, Sheets is awesome. Don't get me wrong, but it's like a 24-hour gas station, convenience store, and deli.
Yeah, it's like a Wawa if you're from
exactly
New Jersey or something.
It's, yeah. I dated a girl from Philadelphia for a few years, and we had the whole Wawa Sheets battle.
Yeah, they're contenders.
And Sheets always wins because Sheets sells beer.
Oh yeah, and they have the MTO, the made-to-order sandwich.
Exactly, you can make whatever you want. But anyway, these folks go and investigate a woman's house. And they use a few interesting methods to detect, you know, typical ghost hunter stuff, an EMF machine, electromagnetic field readers, where they like look for spikes in electrical current.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they use a fucking spirit box. And they do an EVP session, and they do this interesting thing with flashlights where they're asking the spirit to cut on and off flashlights. And the spirit's actually doing it, but not in the sequence that they asked the spirit to do it in. So they feel that the evidence is not good because the spirit didn't do what they asked him to. And all I'm thinking is, but the flashlights were cutting on and off. What more do you fucking need?
Yeah. They needed more attention to the directions, I guess.
Yeah. So I thought
like they're being graded on a quiz.
They're in this poor old lady's really gross, dirty ass apartment, searching for a husband, using these like silly methods, and they're barely filming it. And then boom, back off to Sheets. And then they like literally show like, what did you get? And they talk about what they got. And they
More of a lifestyle thing too.
Yeah, so they're in Winchester bopping around, but they go downtown and they go and they're walking all through Old Town. And you know, they go through Indian Alley and they kind of tell the story of Indian Alley. But the other one that I wanted to get into is the story of Tilly Russell.
Okay.
Who is I mean, it was all farmland back then. But it's down there in the Old Town Mall, and it's right there by kind of Taylor Hotel. But this, her story, the ghost of Tilly Russell, is pretty interesting to me because it's a young woman, Civil War. And the story is that I think every night is kind of the lore. Every night, if you have the chance to see her, you could possibly see her hurrying, like running out of the door, crossing the street and like throwing a shawl over her shoulders to run. And they call her the angel of the battlefield because the whole story is she ran. There was a skirmish outside of her property, and she ran out to take care of a guy, Captain Randolph Ridgely, who was seriously wounded. So she went out there and she nursed him through the night, and he actually ended up living. So the story is, she every night you can see her running out to go take care of that business.
It's like a consistent thing that she does every time.
Every night.
Yeah.
And you know, these people from this show go out and they like sit in front of it, and it's all a vain effort. It's all silly. They probably, I don't even know how long they were there, 10 minutes or something. But you know, drunk people are walking around
all
the town. It's like nothing, you're not gonna see anything here at that time anyway. But that is another, I'd never heard that Tilly Russell story, and it's like right there in the Old Town Mall.
Yeah, that's interesting. That whole kind of repetitive, consistent type of activity that people claim to have witnessed, it's really interesting to me. It almost feels like a recording that's getting played over and over again.
It's on a loop, kind of, man.
Yeah, like a memory that is being emphasized that we're supposed to kind of take meaning from. Near to there is the Hanley Regional Library.
Yeah, which is also
haunted.
Yeah, and, Hanley, man,
and that's a that's a beautiful building. I think that's, I mean, I always felt like proud that that was in our city, because it's such a,
it's,
I mean, it kind of reminds me of a building you might even see in Washington D.C. or something, like the way it's designed. It's very
gorgeous. Stately. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah, the interior of the library is really interesting. It's kind of a labyrinth, and there's all these different levels, and most of the upstairs levels are not accessible to the patrons. So I always wondered, like, what is even up there? But apparently there's, some ghost activity that has been documented there.
Because I used to go there a lot, you know, before pre-internet, you have to actually go to the library and get in the card catalog and go in the reference room and sit there at the big table with all the books you can't check out and read and write a paper. I used to do that constantly. Mm-hmm. But I remember there were spiral staircases that led up to these dark kind of attic spaces, and they were accessible, and I would go up there looking for stuff, and I never saw anything. But I also thought, like, why? I can't even believe I'm allowed to be here. And like, am I allowed to be here? But yeah, the whole thing about the Hanley Library is they say that the face of a man with a quote drooping mustache has been seen peering from the windows of the rotunda. Cause if you know the building, it's like a domed, glass domed kind of building. But they say it's like a full body ghost.
Wow.
With a mustache, wearing a frock coat. And he's been seen by library staff inside the building. And if you know anything about Judge John Hanley, who's, you know, the our high school was John Hanley High School. It's an endowed public school, where it's like a judge from Pennsylvania left a bunch of money. He's not even from Winchester. And our school was built from that money. And I think the library was built from that money. But Hanley had a huge mustache.
Yeah.
So there's a rumor that it's, you know, John Hanley.
Could be.
I don't even know if he was ever at the library. Who even fucking knows?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. It's another example of like an 18th century person, right? Like someone who lived like the 1800s or around, you know, the time of the Civil War or maybe later. But it's like, it seems to be like a consistent era of the ghosts that are around Winchester, you know,
from
a certain time period.
Absolutely. And think about it. There were three battles of Winchester in the Civil War.
Yeah.
And there were two battles of Kernstown. There was a battle of Berryville, which is just out. There's the Battle of Belle Grove, you know? And hundreds, if not thousands, of people died in the area. Like, if you look at the fatalities of the battles, like, it's not, I mean, by today's standards, I guess, whatever. First battle, Winchester, 130 people from both sides were killed. Second battle, 142 were killed.
Wow.
And then the third battle, which was the big one, which is when the Union finally won, and because the first two, they didn't fare so well. There were over 8,000 casualties. I couldn't get an actual death toll, but that seems to be like the big one. And so there's all these potential spirits there, you know, and a lot of them are buried at Mount Hebron Cemetery, which is right in the middle of town, basically.
Yeah, big cemetery.
Just down the street from Abram's Delight.
Yeah.
And
where we went to middle school too.
Yeah, Daniel right across Morgan. The street from Daniel Morgan Middle. And it's all close. Handley Library is honestly not super far from there. It's like just down the road in a way, depending on what street you take.
Well, and that's the cemetery where I had my experience.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So what is your experience at Mount Haven?
Well, the lead up to it is I spent a lot of time in Winchester by myself, alone, like on my skateboard, cruising around, looking for skate spots. And I just enjoyed rolling around and looking and taking in the sights and kind of observing. But what I would also experience a lot of times was a creepy feeling because, you know, depending on where you are, if you're on the downtown mall, it's deserted, it's kind of a weird vibe. And you could find yourself in a situation where you felt like a little bit of creepy factor. And mm-hmm. so I had my board. I think I was probably going to go skate Daniel Morgan because that's what we did a lot. And I was I was on a bike this time, but I was riding past that cemetery and it was middle of the day, no one around, no one in the cemetery. But as I was passing by, I heard from within the gates of the cemetery, a voice call out to me and they said, "Hey," like that, not in like an angry way or in a way that was like that startling, but it was like audible and it got my attention. So I stopped it. And then I thought to myself, well, that's strange because it came from inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked and there was nobody around, man. Nobody on any of the porches of the homes. No cars were around. And it sent a chill down my spine for sure because this voice that called out was like, seemed to be calling to me specifically and from within the cemetery gate. So I was like, freaked out and just kind of like slowly got back on my bike and pedaled away. But that stuck with me. I think I was about 15 or 16 when that happened.
Yeah, man, that's unnerving. And that cemetery's got history. Yeah. And all growing up, I didn't really think about it. And it's got this really gorgeous gatehouse mm-hmm. that, you know, if you go on East Lane side of it, which, you know, it's just like really gorgeous. But it's split into a few different cemeteries within it.
Mm.
Like there's Mount Hebron Cemetery, just like, you know, normal folk are buried. But there's the Stonewall Jackson section where all the Confederate, like almost 3,000 Confederate soldiers are buried. And then right across Woodstock Lane between Woodstock and National towards Virginia Avenue Elementary.
Oh, yeah, that side of town.
There's National Cemetery.
Yep.
Where all the Union soldiers are buried. And I remember, I think I spent fifth grade at Virginia Avenue and we walked down to the National Cemetery and placed American flags on all the, you know, we helped whatever. So there's the basically Union side and Confederate side
mm-hmm.
of this cemetery and the Stonewall Jackson side of the cemetery, which, you know, is part of the big section. Like the National Cemetery is a smaller area, a block-ish two away. But that's where there's activity. And I had no idea, honestly, until I looked into this, that there are the Patton brothers that are buried there. Hmm. George and Tazewell Patton. And they are... George Patton is the grandfather of the actual famous George S. Patton from World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the George C. Scott version of, you know, the big American hero.
Yeah.
His grandfather's buried in that fucking cemetery.
And his heavy lineage there.
And his great uncle is buried there as well. Tazewell is his first name.
Interesting.
But there's reported activity involving a lone ghost figure near the marker for the Patton brothers.
Okay.
So, and it wears a military greatcoat and a peaked hat mm-hmm. and it walks towards the marker and disappears apparently. And this is where it gets kind of weird. I've read that the figure may be none other than Nazi Field Marshal Erwin Rommel, who during the 1930s was one of a number of German military leaders who spent time in the area stuttering studying the military tactics of Stonewall Jackson, who was the famous Confederate general. So there's like, I had no idea there's a Nazi connection to George Patton's grandfather in that, whatever.
Yeah, that is kind of surprising. I mean, basically growing up in Winchester, you didn't have a sense that many people from outside of the area lived there, or much less outside of the country. There was so much like Civil War lore too. My dad occasionally would take me to these reenactments and like the types of people who are really passionate about Civil War history and who participate in the reenactments. Like, I'm sure they have stories for days, man.
Oh, because, yeah.
You know, they understand like the significance of that area so well, and they could probably name way more names of haunts and ghosts.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would be something interesting to dig into, is the reenactment culture of Winchester and that connection to the ghosts and the haunts.
Yeah, because, I mean, this got me looking into just Civil War ghosts in general, which are huge. I mean, they're fucking huge. It's a huge part of ghost culture in America.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, but by the way, before we move on from this Mount Hebron thing, I guess, remember how I said there's like two separate sections of the cemetery?
Yeah.
The Union and the Confederate. So, you know, Woodstock Lane, which separates Mount Hebron from the National Cemetery. It's like the only road in between the two cemeteries for those folks who don't live in Winchester. I got arrested on Woodstock Lane once.
Oh, man.
As my brother. Sorry, Tony.
Oh.
I had your ID at the time. Got away with it. All right, now. So people say that live on Woodstock Lane that sometimes just after sundown, they'll see gray figures rising from the Confederate section of the Stonewall Jackson section of the Mount Hebron Cemetery, and they'll make their way across the street, across Woodstock Lane, to the National Cemetery, I'm sure, to keep the fight going.
Yeah, well, that brings up like a whole conflict that I hadn't even really considered till now, like the Union versus Confederate conflict in our area, because you know, the Mason-Dixon line, you know, like
we were, so
there were probably plenty of Union loyalists and then Confederate, you know, leaning people in the area. And that's crazy to think of. That is George Washington's headquarters is downtown.
Yes.
So, you know, there was a Union presence, but certainly a Confederate presence as
Yeah, George Washington was a big player during the Revolutionary times. There's a lot of American history in the area and a lot of Civil War history. You can't go a few fucking blocks without seeing a Civil War marker on the side of the road, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that leads, like we've been talking about, to a lot of cool haunts and a lot of weird stories. And
you mentioned that abduction case too, which I think it's worth mentioning, that surrounding the Winchester area is the Blue Ridge Mountains. And
it's
pretty like creepy place to take hikes by yourself if you are interested at all in like paranormal stuff, because you know, having read like Communion and other, you know, books related to alien abductions, like that was something I always feared a lot as a kid, is like, oh, we live close enough to the boonies, like where things could happen. And it's interesting to know that there are like some cases that have been documented about abducted people or something.
That case, go back, and this is my very first episode, so it's a little different style, but the story itself is pretty incredible. I think it's still my favorite story that I've told on this podcast, I think, because it's a wild one.
Yeah,
it's a wild one, so go check it out.
Yeah, man. And then you know, with the religious component of our upbringing, I think there's a lot of emphasis on like dark spirits and evil types of stuff that were related to you know, I guess people's perceptions of how spirits manifest in biblical terms. I took karate at the Winchester School of Karate Do. I remember distinctly they had like a Bible study option that you could do after class once a week. My mom was like, well, let's go to it sometime, and I was like, you know, so after karate class, we sat and watched a video about demonic possession and like
no way
demons possessing people and how to like avoid that was like don't play Dungeons and Dragons and don't
no
and stuff. And I remember at one point in the video when like this guy was talking about his experience being possessed, I said like, oh cool, or something, and everybody looked at me with this real like serious face and they're like, it's not cool. And I was like, sorry.
Oh my gosh. What the fuck, man? It's just like, I'm constantly reminded of the movie, the Stephen Dorff classic, The Gate. If you remember that one, you know, the play the record backwards, the metal record backwards, and it opens a gate to hell. Great movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it.
Well, I'm familiar with it, but that whole like idea of Satan having like a presence in the real world, I think that was something that we were taught growing up.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
My household, it was like made pretty clear. Like my mom, in fact, one time threw away all my heavy metal cassettes because she thought thought I was getting too close to the edge there because I started getting into Slayer and stuff. And yeah, I came home from a vacation visit to my grandparents' house and everything was gone. Like that was it.
Man, fuck, that's supremely lame. Like I do remember growing up having to hide things from my parents. But you know, when we got into gangster rap, that was in like fifth grade. That was worse than metal.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you know, it was very vulgar, and you could understand what they were saying. And there was a lot of cuss words.
That brings back memories, man. There's this guy in my class at Daniel Morgan named Lucas Huddleston, and he brought gangster rap CDs to class and be like, hey, check this out, man. And there'd be like these, you know, half naked women chilling on lowriders, and they would be like Luke or, you know, he was pretty deep into it. So it wasn't even like the big name dudes. It was like, you know, affiliates of NWA or affiliates of Two Live Crew, you know. And I was like, man, this is crazy.
Yeah, I know who used to give him his mixtapes. It's Mike Armistead. Shout out Mike Armistead.
Oh, Mike Armistead. I remember that dude.
Yeah, he just came to Portland a couple months ago and came to my house. First time I'd seen him in over 20 years. So what's up, Mike?
Yeah, and shout out to all the Winchester. If anyone from Winchester is listening to this, I don't know if you knew me or thought I was an asshole or something, but you know, I have a lot of great memories and a lot of great friendships that came out of my experience being in Winchester. And I hope, you know, you have some fond memories of me, because there's a part of me that misses it and does think of it as a home. But you know, like what we talked about, being into punk rock, being like a skateboarder and stuff, it wasn't a feeling of inclusion. Like I definitely felt like an outcast most of the time, felt kind of alienated from the prevailing culture that was there.
Yeah, man. I'm sure you're just like an awkward kid glomming at people.
Oh yeah.
Which is what I used to do too. And glomming is the word of the night, the new word of the night for everyone listening. but now if you just want to alienate yourself even more, now you're on a podcast about weird shit.
Yeah.
You know, talking about weird Winchester, just making yourself proven that you're the weirdo everyone thought you was, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about my crew, you know, being skaters, we were always out there. We were always out skating. And a lot of times
I remember
downtown, like the downtown mall was our hotspot, even though that was the number one place you were going to get in trouble because no one wanted you there. And so,
pedestrian mall. I got pulled over by a cop riding my bike through. I cut through one block.
And he
pulled me over and we got into an argument and he let me go. Mm-hmm. But I was just, you're not, anything on wheels is not allowed in that mall. You're only
definitely
allowed
not
to
on
walk.
The mall. Yeah, and even around there, I mean, we had our spots that we would skate, but we would always get in trouble. And we just never learned, you know.
Right.
Like my friend Chase, he's someone we've talked about. He told me before I go on the show today to keep in mind that the time that I spent in Winchester was when I was at my worst, you know, my lowest level of maturity, my highest level of selfish entitlement.
Good point,
and stupidity. So that made a difference. But I think being out there and just kind of, like I said, I like to haunt myself. Like even when I go back now, one of my routines is I'll park somewhere and just walk downtown, walk around, just like check everything out. But you know, there's still that eeriness. I still feel it even when I go back now.
Yeah, man. I mean, do you think,
your family still doesn't live in the old house you felt creeped out in, do they?
Well, no, because my mom remarried, and that was like my stepdad, and so and that marriage didn't last.
So you don't have access to that creepy ass house anymore.
No, I mean, I could probably reach out to my like former stepbrother, John, and see, you know, in fact, next time I go to Winchester, since I have a kid now and stuff, it'd probably be cool to meet up and just, you know,
that'd be interesting to see if you're still to vibe out that place.
Yeah. I lived there for about 3 or 4 years, and definitely, I mean, I felt a presence all around that neighborhood. I mean, we're so close. We're so close to the heart of it that it just felt that way.
Yeah, man. Yeah, the Old Town Winchester is, I was born in that old hospital down there.
Yep, that's where my mom worked.
Yeah. But there's, like I said, the whole, I feel like all the old haunts, mostly, it's all Civil War based. And yeah, well, mostly, I guess. And that led me to start looking at fun Civil War things, like there's a couple really good Civil War Twilight Zone episodes.
Cool.
That I checked out, and I'd seen one before, but it's the 69th episode of the show, and it's called The Passerby. And it's like this really cool episode of a bunch of soldiers walking down this road in front of this woman's tattered house, and she's just sitting out there and she's just lonely, and this guy stops and he's wounded, and he kind of, you know, becomes friends, and they start hanging out, and turns out they're all dead because there's Union soldiers walking by too.
Yeah.
And then her husband comes back who's dead, and then he tells her that she's dead. And that she died of a fever in the house. Yeah. And they all got to go down to the end of the road. And then Abe Lincoln shows up. Abe Lincoln fucking shows up to console her. And he's like, I'm the last casualty of the Civil War.
Man.
You know?
And that's very like, Twilight Zone.
We got to go to the end of the road, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, man. Like, people, I think another thing to touch on is like, we didn't have modern medicine back in those days, like the 1800s or whatever. And so
that's another huge thing.
Plenty of tragic deaths, you know, and untimely deaths as a result of just, you know, that's just how it was.
There are stories of amputees, like, you know, people were heinously fucking amputated in the Civil War.
For sure.
And, you know, there's obviously a lot of ghosts involving dead folks and whatever, but they have literally found during renovations of certain buildings. I think it was Gettysburg, because Gettysburg is like Pennsylvania is the most haunted fucking place possibly in the country because of everything that went down there. But they, you know, they'll take up floorboards while they're renovating and find a pile of amputated bones. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. Antietam too. Like we would go Antietam, to Antietam.
Yeah.
For, that was a very bloody battle. I think that might've been one of the worst, but
yeah.
Oh man, it's a place with plenty of history and plenty of ghosts, apparently.
Yeah, man. Antietam is, I think, where Bloody Lane is. It's a famous bloody battle, and there's a lot of people killed there. But I feel like that Twilight Zone episode may have been influenced by Bloody Lane in Antietam, because it's about a road.
Yeah.
Creepy fucking shit happens.
Hey man, just so you know, like I think I'm probably running a little low on time as far as like needing to get back to dad stuff. But did you want to touch on any other like experience related things or personal history before we wrap it up?
You know, not specifically. I was actually feeling, we're on the same page, man.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm feeling like we got it done.
And
what's funny is my son took a late nap, and I feel like he's going to wake up any second.
I'm actually
surprised he's still asleep.
Well, that's cool. Cause we got a good interview in, man. This is really fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I mean, unless there's anything that you wanted to fit in, if there's anything you want to like say that you got coming up that you got to promote, or you just want to throw out there.
Yeah, man. Just some closing words about Winchester in general. Like, that's the place where I grew up. That's where I spent my childhood, my teenage years. I made a lot of friends, but it was a place, you know, where I have a lot of mixed feelings and mixed memories. But if anybody listening is from Winchester or lives in Winchester, like, yeah, it's me, Dustin Umberger. I went to Bass Hoover Elementary and Middletown Elementary and Daniel Morgan Middle School, Ayler Middle School. I even went to Powhatan for a year and went to Hanley for all 4 years. So I've got deep roots just like Jason. And if you're interested in all to know what I'm doing, I play punk rock music now, and I go by Grim Deeds, and that's my thing. And I'm out here in California, a world away, but in so many other senses, I feel still very connected to where I grew up. So it's been cool to talk about it. And, you know, Jason and I have a lot in common in terms of our interests and experiences ending up where we are now. So it's kind of come full circle.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
It's wild. It's like, I've known you for a long time, but I'm just getting to know you.
Yeah, it's great. And hey, I invite anybody to look me up. Like, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. So, you know, it's about that time in our life where I think it's a good time to reconnect with people from our past. Cause I think you and I both have kind of found our place and our roles as far as like being adults and stuff. So
yeah, man.
Nice to take a stroll down memory lane and compare notes. And it's also nice to just show people that we're, you know, we're not total screw ups. Like, we did something cool with our lives, you know?
Well, jury's still out on that, I guess.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. 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 Once you hear my music, you might change your mind. But yeah, dude, that's great. And thank you again for having me. And I really look forward to hearing the episode, and I'm going to go back and check out earlier episodes, especially ones with your dad.
Yeah, man. Really cool. I appreciate it, dude. And yeah, thanks again for being here. It's I've been looking forward to this one for a while. It was nice to reconnect, and you know, we're obviously going to stay in touch, but
yeah,
if there's any other topic, if there's any weird shit that comes up in your life that you want to talk about on this show, let's do it.
I'd love to come back. Yeah, right on, man. Well, we'll be in touch. Yeah. And yeah, give your son a hug for me, and take care, Jason. It's good talking to you.
You too, man. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
All right. Take care.
Later, Dustin. Bye. Bye. Well, there you have it. Grim Daddy Deeds. Thank you for being here with me. I really appreciate it. I'm not going to lie. My son woke up right when we stopped recording. So, fuck yes on the perfect timing and good call on being a great dad. I always knew you could do it, Dustin. But you sent me a couple songs that I said I would play on the show. And I'm going to honor that by playing some clips of yet another band I had no idea that he was a part of. Because like we've talked about tonight, Dustin is in countless projects. So there's a couple songs from a band that he was in called Super Giants that I'm going to play a few seconds of here. You know, maybe a little bit longer than a few seconds. But the first one is called My Poltergeist. Here we go. Just refuses to behave.
sick fucking song by Supergiants called My Poltergeist. If you want to hear the rest of it, go to their Bandcamp page. You know, Dustin, that kind of reminds me of a song off A Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 4, from a band called Dramarama. The song is called Anything, Anything. And that is a song that me and my bandmates, or my bandmate Mikey and I, used to play every once in a while because he loved that song and he taught me that song. And anyway, that song fucking rules, and you captured the essence of a fucking Nightmare on Elm Street song in my brain. So that is kudos, because that's a hard thing to do. Just, yeah. So the next song is called The White Owl. And I can only imagine it may have something to do with Whitley Strieber in the Communion. Dustin, you can call me out on that. But I would assume it's Communion influenced. But yeah, here it is. It's a song called The White Owl.
Last night, I knew that something wasn't right. Strange light showed through my window. Never colors so bright. Seemed like the break of day, alright. Strange figures stood outside my door. Fuck off! When I open up my eyes to see, sitting at my window, to all and I stare through my soul. And I was staring back at it. Now I can't fall asleep at night, 'cause when I close my eyes, I'm terrified I'll see the owl stares through me in my mind. And
fuck yes, Dustin. Quality shit. I'm proud to call you a friend. I'm proud to say we're from the same home fucking town. Thank you for being here with me. I hope you enjoyed those songs. And if you want to hear more of that, yeah, man, Bandcamp, Supergiants. Those are the two songs that I just played, but that's not even his main act. That's not even the main thing he does. Check out Grim Deeds and everything else I mentioned, or we mentioned throughout the episode. Like I said, the guy just doesn't stop. But grimdeeds.blogspot.com is where you can find all of his awesome interviews with, you know, musical heroes, musical folks. You guys hear the rain coming down right now? You guys hear that? That shit's annoying to me, but it's lovely at the same time. Yeah, that's it. That's it for the night. Thank you, Dustin. Thank you, Grim Deeds. Thank you all for being here. Episode 30, in the bag. I'll see you next week with yet another fucked up, amazing episode of Lost Rhetoric. And until then, please, everyone, stay sane.